Bantam Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Star Wars, The Bounty Hunter Wars, Volume 2, Slave Ship by K.W. Jeter. Now, during the events of Star Wars: Return of the Jedi. Fear is a useful thing. That was one of the best lessons that a bounty hunter could learn, and Bossk was learning it now. Through the cockpit viewport of the Houndstooth, he saw the explosion that ripped the other ship, Boba Fett's Slave One, into flame and shards of blackened durasteel. A burst of wideband comlink static like an electromagnetic death cry had simultaneously deafened Bossk. When he could finally hear himself think again, Bossk looked out at the empty space where Slave One had been. "It's dead," thought Bossk with immense satisfaction. "At last." Before transferring back here to his own ship, Bossk had wired up enough thermal explosives in Slave One to reduce any living thing aboard it to mere ash and bad memories. The silence of the Hound's cockpit was broken by a barely audible pinging signal from the control panel. Bossk glanced down and saw that the Hound's telesponder had picked up the presence of another ship in the immediate vicinity. According to the coordinates that appeared in the readout screen, it was almost on top of the Houndstooth. And it was the ship known as Slave One. The ID profile was an exact match. "That's impossible," thought Bossk, bewildered. His heart shuddered to a halt inside his chest, then staggered on. Before the explosion, he had picked up the same ID profile from the other side of his own ship. He had turned the Houndstooth around just in time to see the huge, churning ball of flame fill his view screen. But, he realized now, he hadn't seen Slave One itself. Which meant... Bossk heard another sound, even softer, coming from somewhere else in his own ship.
"He's here. Boba Fett."
Somehow, Bossk knew, the explosion hadn't consumed Slave One and its occupants at all. And the deafening electronic noise that had filled the cockpit had also been enough to cover Boba Fett's unauthorized entry of the Houndstooth. A voice came from the cockpit's overhead speaker, a voice that was neither his own nor Boba Fett.
20 seconds to detonation.
It was the calm, unexcited voice of an autonomic bomb. Only the most powerful ones contained warning circuits like that. Bossk dove for the hatchway behind him. In the emergency equipment bay, his clawed hands tore through the contents of one of the storage lockers and hastily shoved a few essential items through the self-sealing gasket of a battered pressure duffel.
"I'm out of here,"
thought Bossk.
15 seconds to detonation.
The calm and friendly voice spoke in the Hound's central corridor as Bossk ran for the escape pod. Under the death fear that accelerated his pulse was sheer murderous rage and annoyance, the inevitable result of every encounter he'd had with Boba Fett.
That stinking, underhanded barb. Was there no way to kill him so that he would just stay dead? 12.
Bossk wiped all thoughts other than self-preservation from his mind. The point of his claw hit the big red button for which he had been aiming. With a sharp hiss, the escape pod hatch slid open. He threw the pressure duffel inside, then scrambled in after it. Outside the pod, he could hear muffled clanking and creaking sounds as the Hound's machinery rotated the pod into eject position.
"Come on,"
Bossk's voice grated in his throat. Then his spine was suddenly jammed back against the hatch behind him as an intense burst of thruster fire shot the pod out into space and away from the ship. The stars shifted disorientingly in the viewport as the pod rolled to one side, Squeezing his eyes shut, Voss wondered what number the bomb's countdown had reached.
4,
said the calm, familiar voice of the bomb.
It's in here.
Boba Fett had planted the bomb inside the escape pod.
3.
A surge of adrenaline coursed through the Trandoshan's body. His claws raked across the pod's interior, scrabbling to find the explosive device.
2.
The unhurried voice came from a small blue cube. Frantically, Bosk looked about for some way to eject the box from the escape pod. There wasn't any.
1.
Bosk turned his face away for all the good that would do and thrust the bomb against the opposite side of the pod near the tiny viewport. Nothing happened. He was still alive. Slowly, Bosk brought his gaze back around to the blue cube. He cautiously inserted the point of one claw and pried it open. The only contents were a miniaturized speaker and a few pre-programmed vocal circuits. It hadn't been a bomb at all, and he hadn't felt the impact of a bomb in the distance outside the escape pod, so there probably hadn't been one placed aboard the Houndstooth either, of any size or destructive capability. If he hadn't given in to panic and hadn't abandoned the Hound, if he had stayed there and had gone toe-to-toe with Boba Fett, he might have settled his accounts with the underhanded scum once and for all, and still have been in possession of his own ship. Now, where was he? The pod's navigational circuits appeared to be in operative condition. They had already locked onto Tatooine, the nearest habitable destination. The planet's familiar image now filled the viewport. As he shifted position inside the pod, the contents of the pressure duffel poked him in the ribs. At least he had managed to get some things off the Houndstooth. Valuable things. Whether he would be able to profit from what he'd salvaged, that remained to be seen. As the surface details of Tatooine grew larger in the viewport, Bosk's thoughts turned ever darker and more murderous. On the great list of grievances that he kept next to his heart, every one with Boba Fett's name attached, another entry had been made. Neela turned from the viewport of Slave One's cockpit. In the distance beyond the escape pod with the bounty hunter Bosk aboard had been a point of light dwindling among the stars.
You let him get away.
You state the obvious, replied Boba Fett. Yeah, well, I don't get it either.
That comment came from Dengar standing in the cockpit's hatchway. His face was still shiny with sweat from his recent exertions. There had been a lot of stuff to move, and in a hurry, from this ship into the cargo module that had been launched from it.
That hunter was trying to kill us.
Not us, corrected Fett. Me. In all likelihood, Bosk didn't even know you two were aboard. That didn't make Neela feel any better. Things had been happening fast, too fast for her taste, even before Boba Fett's personal ship had lifted off from Tatooine's Dune Sea. Slave One's swift, functional mass had come flaring down from the night sky like a magnified emblem of potentiated lethality, just in time to crush beneath its hot rocket nozzles one of the two men who had pinned her, Dengar, and Fett down with their blaster rifle fire. Irritatingly, Boba Fett had kept his cool during all the shooting.
Easy for him,
Neela grumped to herself. He was the one who had transmitted the signal to Slave One up in orbit above their heads, so he had known it was coming.
He just hadn't felt like letting his partners know.
If that's what we still are, thought Neela. With her arms folded, she studied each of the two bounty hunters in turn. Dengar wasn't too hard to figure out. She could probably make a deal with him and he'd stick to it, especially if there was some chance of realizing a profit out of it. But keeping company with someone like Boba Fett was a dangerous proposition. From what she had already picked up, Neela knew that Fett's business associates tended to have lives as short as those of his enemies. Neela kept her own face expressionless as she watched Fett maneuvering the ship. Her own fate had become bound with one of the hardest bounty hunters in the universe, the least likely to be swayed by threats or violence or seduction. In some ways, she had been better off when she had still been in Jabba's palace as one of the late Hutt's troop of dancing girls. At least then, she had known that her youth and beauty, and Jabba's taste for those enticing and precious qualities, would keep her alive for a while, or until Jabba had grown either jaded with her dark-eyed looks or stimulated by the thought of tossing her to his pet rancor, the way he had done with that poor little Twi'lek girl, Ula. She closed her eyes, barely able to suppress the shudder evoked by the memory of the girl's screams. Whoever the ones that had finally bested Jabba the Hutt, Dengar had told her names, Luke Skywalker and Princess Leia Organa, that meant nothing to her. They had done a good job in ridding the universe of that massive, loathsome slug. Neela supposed it would be asking a lot to have expected them or anyone else to have also restored her past to her. The darkly shadowed memories of who she had been and all that had happened to her before she had found herself in Jabba's palace. It would be a lot to expect from Boba Fett as well. The bounty hunter trade was concerned with only one thing: delivering their precious bits of hard merchandise to the highest bidder. If that merchandise had thoughts and fears and hopes, or whether all that went to make up the merchandise's spirit had been scoured away by a deep-level memory wipe, that didn't matter. If Boba Fett was keeping her alive, he had in fact pulled Neela out of their attacker's line of fire and aboard Slave One just seconds before it had taken off, then she had to assume it was being done on a bounty hunter's agenda, and not out of any concern for her welfare.
That's what I've got to figure out, Neela reminded herself. What's in it for him?
More than her own survival depended upon the answer to that question. She knew that it was undoubtedly the key to unlocking all the other mysteries, all the way back to her own true name. Another voice broke into her brooding thoughts.
You still didn't tell us, said Dengar, why you let that boss creature get away.
Boba Fett glanced over his shoulder at the bounty hunter standing in the cockpit's hatchway.
You know his name?
Of course.
Dengar pointed to one of the data screens beneath Slave One's forward viewport.
I recognize the ID code that came up when we were approaching his ship. Last I heard, the Houndstooth is still Bosk's ship.
Correction, said Fett. It was his ship.
You gonna blow it up?
Dengar grimaced and slowly shook his head.
I don't know if that's such a good idea. I've had a few run-ins with Bosk before, and he can be a pretty ugly customer.
I can take care of him. I've done so in the past. A note of amusement sounded in Boba Fett's voice.
So long as you stick with me, as long as we keep going with this partnership that we've agreed upon, then you don't really have anything to worry about at all, do you?
The expression on Dengar's face indicated to Neela that the end of the bounty hunter's worries was still far away. She had to admit, though, that Boba Fett's claim seemed factual and not just boasting. He had been way ahead of Bosk, even as soon as they had all climbed aboard Slave One and sealed the entry hatch.
The ship is going to blow, Fett had announced. Somebody shoved a load of explosives aboard it. The ship's computer has already done a spectrum read on the trace molecules in the air.
Boba Fett had quickly located the explosives, extracted them, and stuffed them aboard a cargo module. Before jettisoning the module, he had wired into its power circuits a small device that he had brought down from the cockpit area.
What's that?
Neela had pointed to the device.
An ID overlay transmitter, Fett had replied, programmed with Slave One's identification codes. Strictly short range and without the hard encryption levels that would get it past a real ID inquiry. But it should be enough to fool, or just long enough, the uninvited guest who left this little package here.
The rest had been easy. Once the cargo module had been shot out from Slave One, its navigation circuits had sent it homing toward the other ship lying in wait. The explosion, when Bosk had pushed the button, had given enough cover for Boba Fett to hit his thrusters with full power and come swooping up alongside the Hound's Tooth. He had been inside the other bounty hunter's ship with his own surprises ready to go before Bosk had known what was happening. All of that fast strategizing, had been easy enough for Neela to follow. That was then, though. This was now. "I still don't understand," she said aloud, "why you didn't kill that Bosk instead of just throwing a scare into him like that."
"It's simple." Boba Fett didn't look over at her, but continued making adjustments to Slave One's navigation coordinates. "Right now, the whole universe believes I'm dead."
"That's true," said Dengar. "When I went into Mos Eisley, the story about you falling down the Sarlacc's throat was all over the spaceport."
Fett punched in a few more numbers.
"Sometimes it can be a productive situation to be dead, or at least to have creatures think you are."
"So you let Bosk get away after he saw that you're still alive?" Neela couldn't fathom what she was hearing. "Once he makes his way into Mos Eisley, he'll blab the truth to everyone who listened to him."
"No, he won't."
Boba Fett gave a single shake of his helmeted head.
"Bosk is at least intelligent enough to realize that he benefits as well from a universe-wide belief in my death. With my absence, many will regard him as being the number one bounty hunter still working the trade. There will be merchandise to be located and secured that will come his way instead of the parties posting the bounties holding out for my services. And there are the benefits to the ego as well. Those have always been a big motivation to him. He may hate my guts, but he's not going to relate any stories about my still being alive that make him look like a fool. When he gets to Mos Eisley, he's going to have a hard enough time telling the Cantina habitués why he no longer has the Hound's Tooth. It's been his ship for a long time. He's not about to tell anyone that he got frightened out of it like a Beatuan Fenhair."
"You forgot about one thing."
A smug expression showed on Dengar's face.
"This ship, Slave One, is known throughout the galaxy as being Boba Fett's. Soon as other creatures spot it cruising into their systems, they're gonna know that you're alive and up to your old trade again."
"How fortunate, then, that we have another ship available to us."
Boba Fett indicated the cockpit's forward viewport. In the distance, outside, the Hound's Tooth floated.
"Once its ID code is broken out and overridden, with a new ID programmed in, the ship won't even be recognizable as Bosk's. That should provide us all the anonymity we require."
One thing still puzzled Neela. "But why such a big need for secrecy?"
"Yeah," chimed in Dengar. "Your reputation is the biggest thing you've got going for you. There are a lot of creatures who'll just roll over and give up if they hear you're involved in something close to them. If you give all that up, then you're starting from zero. Everything will have to be done the hard way every time."
Boba Fett swiveled the pilot's chair around from the controls. His helmeted gaze, hidden behind the dark, narrow visor, took in each of them in turn.
"You should consider yourselves unusually privileged," he said slowly, "that I've explained as much as I have already. I'm not in the habit of justifying my methods to anyone. But now I have a partner, so that requires a certain forbearance on my part. And as for you,"
he pointed to Neela,
"I have no objection to your listening in to what passes between Dengar and myself, but harbor no illusions. I saved you and brought you along with us for a reason."
Neela glared back at him. "Which is?"
"You'll find out soon enough. But for right now, you have value to me. Take comfort in that."
"Sure," she thought to herself. "Right up until I don't have any value for you. Then what?" That time might come at any moment. Neela had already decided she would be ready for it. Boba Fett might be the most dangerous bounty hunter in the galaxy, but if he thought she was just going to wait around for him to dispose of her in whatever way suited his plans, then he had made a fatal mistake. Neela kept her face a mask, as expressionless as the one into which she gazed. She didn't know how she was going to bring about that little surprise for Boba Fett, but the hidden workings of her brain were already in motion. The news had come a long way, from one side of the galaxy to the other, From just above one of the remotest backwater planets known to any sentient creature, to one of the Empire's brightest centers of power and wealth. We live in a universe of lies, said Kuat to Kuat. One of his hands stroked the silken fur of the phalanx cradled against his chest.
Sir?
Fenald, Kuat's head of security, stood next to him, close to the private reception area's great segmented view screens. From here, the construction docks and engineering facilities of Kuat Drive Yards could be seen stretching out toward the range of stars spiraling in the limitless distance. Generations of the Kuat bloodline had first created, then transformed the corporation into the apotheosis of industrial production. At the fringes of Kuat Drive Yards, immense freighters disgorged the raw materials stripped from other star systems, all to be forged into the ships and weaponry of the Imperial Navy. Kuat Drive Yards owned no allegiance to anything but itself, harbored no great ideals other than its own survival and independence. Eventually, one side or the other would win out. If it were Emperor Palpatine or Leia Organa and Luke Skywalker and the forces for which they had become both symbols and leaders, all that Kuat wished to make sure of was that Kuat Drive Yards was on a friendly, or at least neutral, basis with the victors. Kuat was aware of the security head's puzzlement. The remark had come after a long, brooding silence.
Pay me no heed.
Beside him, Fenald turned away for a moment. The security head pressed his fingertips to his ear, listening intently to the buried whisper of his cochlear implant.
The report is being decrypted and analyzed, technician. The ship known as Slave One, registered to the bounty hunter Boba Fett, was found drifting in orbit above the planet Tatooine.
Found by whom?
That was the important part. Kuat was aware that the Imperial fleet was no longer in the sector. If it had been, Kuat's own bombing raid on Tatooine's doomed sea would have had to have been aborted.
Slave One was found by a routine security patrol of the Rebel Alliance.
Did our sources have any other information about the ship? The content, perhaps?
A shake of the head.
Other than it being unoccupied, nothing. The Rebel Alliance forces that found the ship are still examining it.
They won't find anything. The rebels are at a critical stage in their campaign against the Empire, and the crisis isn't likely to end anytime soon.
They're not going to waste their precious time going over the ship of a dead bounty hunter, as they're likely to believe Boba Fett to be, with a fine-tooth comb. The Rebel Alliance will give Fett's ship a cursory going over, and then they'll try to dispose of it as quickly as possible.
Of course. The security head nodded slowly, digesting the other's superior wisdom.
I imagine they'll be able to get a pretty good price for Slave One.
Possibly, agreed Kuat.
The only thing that's important in this regard is that we acquire Slave One and its contents as discreetly as possible. Perhaps it would be best if we secured some remote locale to which Slave One could be taken, and an inspection team could go there and examine the ship. We'd have to make sure, though, that they couldn't be identified as Kuat Drive Yard's employees.
The security head nodded.
That could be arranged, technician.
See to it. That will be all for now.
Kuat remained gazing out the segmented view screens. Even if the unlikeliest event had occurred and Boba Fett really was dead, there were very likely traces aboard Slave One of some of the deeper and more dangerous conspiracies with which the bounty hunter had become involved. Evidence that led back to Kuat Drive Yards. That was the real danger that had to be averted at all costs.
If Fett destroyed the cargo droid, brooded Kuat, or got rid of it somehow, then we might be safe.
But if the big awkward droid still existed, with its box-like innards full of spy equipment and incriminating data waiting to be deciphered and analyzed, then a whole new level of trouble would begin for Kuat Drive Yards. All because of a holo video of an Imperial stormtrooper raid on an isolated moisture farm on Tatooine.
and the pheromone scent of the galaxy's most powerful criminal, the leader of the Black Sun organization. Into Kuat's meditations came the image of Prince Shizor's face, with its violet eyes and cold, sneering smile. Even more than Emperor Palpatine, Shizor had been the enemy Kuat Driveyards had to fear. Shizor's death had not eliminated that threat. Dengar leaned against the side of the hatchway. You know how to pilot this thing?
Boba Fett raised his gloved hands from the control panel of the houndstooth. Trandoshan operating interfaces are on the crude and awkward side, but the ship's configuration is otherwise standard. Anything of which those big claws are capable is, I assure you, equally within my grasp.
I bet,
thought Dengar. He found himself gazing at the back of Boba Fett's helmet, wondering what was going on inside it. What schemes and hidden agendas might be ticking away in the other bounty hunter's skull. It was no help to have seen Fett without the distinctive Mandalorian helmet. He supposed he was one of the few, along with the former dancing girl Neela, who could make that claim. All that time down on Tatooine, when the two of them had been nursing Boba Fett back to health, after he'd managed to explode his way out of the Sarlacc's gut. And Dengar was still no closer to figuring out the man whose life he'd saved. And that was bad news, considering he was now supposedly partners with the deadliest and most feared bounty hunter in the galaxy. A partnership that Boba Fett had proposed, and that Dengar had accepted, perhaps a little too quickly, now that he'd had a chance to think it over. Why did I agree to that? The ostensible reason was that the arrangement had seemed the quickest way to make a lot of money, pay off the huge debt load he'd been dragging around for years, and marry his beloved Manaru. If she were still waiting for him, and if he returned to her as something other than a blaster-fried corpse. Those were big ifs, and getting increasingly bigger in Dengar's mind the more time he spent hooked up with Boba Fett. If his luck and his skills had been nothing to boast of before, he had at least managed to keep himself alive. But there hadn't been mysterious unidentified forces bringing a full-scale bombing raid down on his head, as had happened back on Tatooine. That was the problem with hooking up with someone like Fett. Fett had whatever it took to survive under the most murderous conditions. If you weren't at that level, you were dead meat. So he tried again to get some useful information. Where exactly is it we're going? Boba Fett didn't look around at him. I prefer keeping that on a need-to-know basis, and right now you don't need it.
That doesn't seem like much of a partnership if you're making all the decisions.
Dengar's voice tightened inside his throat.
I had the impression that somehow we were going to be on an equal footing. I guess I got that wrong, huh?
This time, Boba Fett did swivel the pilot's chair around. You might have had some misapprehension along that line. The flatness of his words was scarier than any show of emotion would have been. We can, Fett continued, be very useful to each other. That's the only basis I know for a partnership. Of course, if you consider something else to be the case, then perhaps we should think about dissolving the partnership. Is that what you want? Boba Fett leaned slightly forward in the pilot's chair, bringing the pressure of his visored gaze closer to Dengar.
Because if we're not going to be partners, our business relationship will be a lot different.
No, said Dengar hastily. That's okay. I'm perfectly satisfied with the way things are. You run the operations however you want, and that's fine by me.
I was hoping you'd see it in that light.
Boba Fett swiveled back toward the cockpit controls.
I'll make the decisions, and you carry them out.
Neela could barely believe what she had just heard. Overheard, actually. She had tapped into the houndstooth's internal communication system through an access panel in the main personnel quarters aboard ship. She was dismayed at the manner in which Boba Fett walked all over Dengar, for no more reason than a simple inquiry as to where they were all heading. If things came down to a split between herself and Boba Fett, and she could already see how that was becoming increasingly likely, then having the other bounty hunter Dengar on her side wouldn't make much difference. Fett could eliminate them both without any inconvenience at all. Dengar might have fallen for that partnership scam, but she hadn't. Neela hadn't agreed to it either. As far as she was concerned, she was an independent operator with no one's skin but her own to watch out for. The only problem with that was, she still didn't know whose skin that really was. "I don't even know my real name," mused Neela bitterly. Her name and everything that went with it, history, friends, enemies. She had her suspicions pieced together from logic rather than actual information. Whoever dumped me off at Jabba's palace, whoever it had been, that was the creature for whom she had to watch out. Or creatures, in the plural. It might have been a whole conspiracy, any number of the galaxy's sinister forces leagued against her. They must have had their reasons for wiping her memory clean, disguising her as a simple dancing girl, and sticking her inside the fortress headquarters of one of the most powerful criminal overlords to be found on any world. Perhaps Jabba the Hutt had known the whole story behind her being in his palace. But that didn't do her any good now. Jabba was dead, and all the secrets that the loathsome slug had kept to himself were gone as well. Almost the only thing that remained from her past, a scrap of memory that had been left behind by the wipe process, was an image. The image of Boba Fett's narrow-visored helmet, concealing the living face beneath its hard, inhuman gaze. She had seen that masked face at Jabba's palace, and Neela had sensed that the bounty hunter hadn't been just guarding the hut, as he'd been hired to do. Jabba had been one of the few creatures in the galaxy wealthy enough to have engaged Boba Fett's services like that. But she had also been sure that Fett had been following his own private agenda as well. It hadn't taken her long to pick up on it, that every time the bounty hunter had returned to Jabba's palace from one of his mysterious errands, his helmeted gaze had turned in her direction, making certain that she was still there, alive and unharmed. Fett had already assured her, and I believe it, she thought grimly, that concern for other creatures' lives was a notion foreign to his mind. If Fett had an interest in keeping her alive, then he undoubtedly had his reasons for it, and those reasons might not be any that were to her advantage. There was one more question that was even more disturbing. What happened, wondered Neela, when those reasons come to an end? All she would have to do, if and when that final confrontation came, would be to take on the galaxy's number one bounty hunter, a killing machine that other killers dreaded. Take him on, thought Neela, and take him out. It wouldn't be easy, but oddly, as slim as her chances might be, she found herself almost looking forward to that final encounter. The course of Neela's thoughts was interrupted by the clang of boot soles upon the treads of the ladder that stretched up from the cargo area to the cockpit of the appropriated Hound's Tooth. Neela quickly started to close the access panel to the comm circuits, then relaxed when she saw that it was only Dengar climbing down the ladder.
Nice job, said Neela.
With her thumb, she pointed to the exposed wiring.
I heard everything you said, and everything Boba Fett said back to you.
Neela slowly shook her head.
You and I are going to have to stick together.
Why?
Dengar peered suspiciously at her.
I've already got a partnership going with Boba Fett. That's worth a lot more than being a partner with someone like you.
Come on, said Neela. Your little conference just now in the cockpit should have made it clear to you just what your relationship is with Boba Fett.
If you've fallen for that partner's nonsense, you're even more of an idiot than you appear to be.
A scowl darkened Dengar's face. That's hard talk, coming from somebody without a friend in the whole galaxy.
Neela bristled at the jibe.
That remains to be seen, she thought. but right now she had other more pressing business to take care of. You're not an idiot. My apologies. Saying even that much grated against some deeply embedded fiber in Neela's character, a personality trait that had survived the memory wipe that had been performed on her. Other creatures were supposed to apologize to her, whether they were in the wrong or not. She felt certain that was the proper state of affairs. But for now, in this situation in which she'd found herself, she'd have to act otherwise. But there's something you've got to understand. Neela sat down next to Dengar on the narrow ledge of the bench. There's things you're trying to accomplish, all that you want to make possible for yourself and Manaru. And you can't trust Boba Fett. He's not concerned with yours and Manaru's happiness.
I don't expect him to be.
Dengar spoke stiffly and guardedly.
He's a businessman.
If that's all he were, we'd be safe. But he's a little bit more than that. Come on, let's face it. If Boba Fett was interested in having a partner, he would have hooked himself up with some bounty hunter other than you.
Such as?
Practically anybody, Neela shrugged. He could have made an offer to Bosk. Bosk is supposedly the toughest and hardest bounty hunter in the galaxy after Boba Fett himself. Those two would have made an unstoppable partnership. Neela's eyes narrowed to slits as she saw Dengar's reaction to her words. What are you laughing about?
Sorry.
A derisive smile remained on Dengar's face.
But I find your ignorance amusing. There are plenty of sentient creatures, especially in the bounty hunter trade, who are just a little more knowledgeable about Boba Fett's personal history than you seem to be.
An anger that had become all too familiar burst into flame around Neela's heart. I have to figure out things that they already know.
Neela had a lot of blanks to fill in before she would be on an equal footing with even the most ignorant backworlder. That was all the more reason for her to get Dengar on her side, at least for the time being. She could use him, both as an ally and as a source of information, until she had been able to find and fit enough missing pieces together. The trick would be to convince Dengar that the road to that future life he envisioned with his bride was one that led through Neela's plans. She already had her notions of how to plant that idea in his head.
You've got me there, said Neela, her voice carefully modulated. Of course, there's things you know about that I don't.
That's right,
Dengar nodded in agreement.
Look, you've got to tell me.
One of Dengar's eyebrows raised as he looked back at her.
Tell you what?
Tell me everything.
Neela couldn't keep a pleading tone from her voice.
Everything that I don't know.
That could take a while.
All right. Just about Bosk and Boba Fett, then.
She was desperately clutching at anything, any key to the past.
Some of it you know already.
Dengar made a one-handed gesture vague enough to indicate a point in time rather than space.
Back when we were still on Tatooine.
That was true.
There had been empty hours enough while they had waited for Boba Fett's resurrection for some of the blanks to have been filled in, or at least those that pertained to the history of Boba Fett and the Bounty Hunters Guild. What existed of the Guild now was only that which remained after the various interlocking conspiracies and schemes had finished with it. Conspiracies, all of which had had Boba Fett at their center. An entire war had broken out among the Bounty Hunters, and not all of them had survived. And if any could be said to have won that war, it would be Boba Fett himself.
You're right, Neela said. I know some of it, thanks to you. Now, how about the rest?
Dengar regarded her in silence for a moment, then slowly nodded.
Okay. He leaned back against the bulkhead. I guess we've got time.
Neela settled back, arms crossed over her breast, as the figure beside her started talking. And then, just after the events of Star Wars, A New Hope, Slouched in the form chair in his private quarters in the Black Sun headquarters, Prince Shizor extended his hand and took the single sheet of flimsy plast that the bowing lackey offered to him. He raised the sheet in his hand, holding it at a comfortable distance from his gaze. It was a report from one of his chief lieutenants in the Black Sun organization, the Kienthar named Krita. Krita had some excellent sources of information planted inside the various widespread financial institutions that serviced the galaxy's less than savory business enterprises. Those businesses included the arachnoid assembler Kudar Mubat's activities as a go-between for bounty hunters and their clients. This particular datum was one for which Prince Shizor had been waiting. Both remaining factions of Bounty Hunter Guild in communication with Kudar Mubat. Shizor appreciated brevity and conciseness in such reports. Otandan of True Guild and Bosk of Guild Reform Committee sighted aboard Webb. Only a few seconds had passed from Shizor's examination of Krita's report to his complete understanding of all that it meant. He nodded slowly. There was a risk to himself that came with such valuable knowledge. Emperor Palpatine still seemed to be unaware that Shizor, one of his most trusted lieutenants, was also overlord of Black Sun, the galaxy's supreme criminal organization. Even though Lord Vader had voiced his own suspicions in that regard to the Emperor and more than once. But Palpatine must know, brooded Shizor. It was impossible to believe that the Emperor, with his near omniscience about everything that happened in the galaxy, would not know. Emperor Palpatine was a master of subtle strategy. Perhaps it suited his purposes to allow Black Sun a free hand for the time being. If Palpatine were to make a move against the criminal organization at a time like this, the Empire could find itself grievously stretched by combating the Rebel Alliance and Black Sun simultaneously. But Shizor was not such a fool as to think himself thereby immune from all danger. Any indiscretions on his part, if the galaxy at large were to learn of his being the head of Black Sun, and the Emperor's hand would be forced. Palpatine's control over his dominions was not yet so strong that he could risk the Empire appearing to have traitors at its very heart. The beep of Shizor's personal comlink interrupted his musings.
Your Excellency, the Emperor has summoned you for an audience.
Please tell the Emperor that it will be my honor to be in his imperial presence.
The high, intricately patterned door swung open before Shizor. Once more, he found himself in the presence of the galaxy's ruling power.
Shizor.
The Emperor's simple throne turned, bringing his hooded gaze and his thin, humorless smile toward the center of the cold, empty space.
As much pleasure as there can be found in one scurrying underlings, I find in you.
The throne room was both empty and occupied by another. The hollow image of Lord Vader, insubstantial yet oppressive, stood at one side. Shizor brought his gaze back to the Emperor.
You honor me with your praise, my lord.
One corner of Palpatine's bloodless lips twisted in a sneer.
I do not praise you, Shizor. As with all my servants, you neither surprise nor disappoint me. I expect foolishness and incompetence, and I find I am richly rewarded in those things.
The Emperor's tongue-lashing was in his usual manner. Shizor had grown used to it, though the word still rankled his proud spirit.
Some day, old man.
His thoughts were a silent and carefully guarded promise inside the chambers of his skull.
Your precious force and all your servants will be able to save you.
In the meantime, though, the show of servility had to be maintained.
If I fail you, my lord... Shizor bowed his head. Then the regret truly is mine.
The hollow image of Lord Vader spoke up.
Do not be deceived by this one.
Bands of visual static flickered through the black figure as one holographically reproduced arm rose, its hand pointing toward Prince Shizor.
His speech is elegant, my lord, as always. But it is as hollow as his unfulfilled promises.
Bold words, Lord Vader.
Shizor allowed himself a flash of anger.
Especially from one who has assured our Emperor that the Rebel Alliance would be crushed long ago.
If Darth Vader had been physically present in the throne room, those words might have been worth Shizor's life. He knew how dangerous a game he was playing.
I would caution the Prince.
Thunder, ominous and deep, sounded in Vader's speech. Shizor sensed a pressure at his throat like an invisible hand tightening against his windpipe, cutting off the flow of blood and air to his brain. He didn't know if he was imagining it or whether Vader's powers could reach this far. Black spots, the first signals of anoxia, were already beginning to form and coalesce in Shizor's vision. The invisible grip seemed undeniably real now, like a fist beneath his throat, shoving his head back, lifting him onto the balls of his feet. The Emperor had always intervened before this point, as though he were commanding a guard beast to heal. A single thought emerged through the darkness welling inside Shizor's skull.
I wasn't summoned here for an audience with the Emperor, but an execution. My own.